Welcome to another episode of the Let's Sip podcast, the podcast repontificates on all things craft beer. I'm your host, Brandon E. Gaylor, and unfortunately I am redoing a segment here. I was having some microphone issues when I recorded this segment the first time around, so hopefully the sound quality is going to be better. This time around, I tried fixing the issues after the fact, and it just wasn't working, so I figured I might as well go back and try it again. Yes, if it seems impossible to believe, but the low-quality sound of this podcast was even worse for this particular segment beforehand. So, here's the attempt number two. Also, just to let you know, I do believe I will be talking about one particular beer in this first segment. So when you get to the end of this episode and I mention that I'll be covering a particular beer in the next episode, just ignore that because I decided to change things up here. And since I had to re-record the first segment, I figured I might as well talk about this particular beer here, so here we go. First off, I just wanted to mention something briefly. It looks like Half Acre is going to be putting out their signature pale ale Daisy Cutter in a stovepipe sized can, a 19.2 ounce size can, which is ideal for perhaps the commute on the train or, you know, taking to the park if you just want one or two beers or something like that. Usually a stovepipe can's a pretty good deal. Relatively low cost even for a craft beer a lot of the time, and it's often how I like to consume my craft beer. I've had many a stovepipe since I've been here in Texas and had tried many a stovepipe back in when I was in the Chicagoland area as well. But Half Acre is one of the best breweries in the Chicagoland area. I do miss not having them here in Texas. And the Daisy Cutter Pale Ale, it's arguably the best pale ale in Chicago. It's very easily at least one of the best, maybe in top three. Or even definitely top five, maybe top three. I would definitely argue that it might just be one of the best or the best. And it might even be one of the best in the whole country. But I've not had enough pale ales to make that full-on judgment. But it's a very good beer. I do miss it dearly, not having it here in Texas. And at least Chicago people will be able to enjoy that in a new format in a larger can coming very soon. Segueing to a bit of bad news, looks like the NYC outpost of McKellar Brewing is going to be closing. Apparently they had a brewery and restaurant in Citi Field where the New York Mets play. But considering the state of the world and the fact that fans are not allowed to watch any baseball games, the brewery and restaurant have been closed throughout the year, and unfortunately that is not financially viable, of course, for a restaurant and a brewery. So that outpost is being closed. Apparently they already have another brewery that wants to move in there, surprisingly. So I don't know how they're going to operate once they get set up there, unless things change or unless I don't even know how that facility actually works, if there is an entrance external to the ballpark or not, if somebody can come in without going through the ballpark, if that's a reasonable option, or who knows how they're going to work with that, but it looks like somebody else already wants to move into that spot. Maybe they're just super optimistic and hoping for the best for next year. But yeah, McKellar's NYC location is shutting down. This comes on the heels of their San Francisco location, which shut down in May Fortunately, their San Diego location is still open, so people can still go there. They're still slinging beer out of there. But yeah, two locations closed for McKellar this year, so not a good 2020 for McKellar Brewing. Of course, not a good 2020 for any of us as far as the economy and businesses and beer drinking, even beer drinking goes. But McKellar's been having a rough one so far this year. And one topic that I wanted to discuss briefly, since I've gone to my local store where I like to buy beer, I've noticed that a lot of blonde ales are in the cooler in the mix currently. So this got me wondering, is anybody really a big fan of a blonde ale? And if so, should I cover it on the podcast? To be honest, anytime I'm buying beer, or if I go to a tap room, or if I go to like a gastropub with a lot of beers on tap, I usually don't even bother giving a blonde ale too much thought. Oh, there's always something more I want to try, an IPA or a stout or a porter. There's always something else that I would rather have. If I'm going to like a brewery tap room and I have to pick a flight, a blonde ale is usually not going to be in the mix unless they have a really small option of beers or a very small a selection of stuff that I really want to try. There's usually something else I'd rather go for, so I don't usually give a blonde ale too much thought. But are there a lot of big blonde ale fans out there? Am I doing you a disservice? Should I be talking about blonde ales? Let me know. Go on to the Let's Sip Podcast Facebook page. Leave me a post, send me a message, or put a comment on one of the posts out there. Let me know. Should I be covering blonde ales more, yes or no? Depending on what you guys say, I might grab a blonde ale to talk about in a future episode. So look forward to hearing what you all think. You could also let me know on Twitter as well. My Twitter handle is Brandon E. Gaylor. Just got back on Twitter in May after taking several years off the platform. I don't do a lot of beer talk on there, but would certainly love to hear, let you guys know your thoughts on blonde ales. And that would certainly direct a future episode if you guys want to hear me talk about blonde ales. So let me know. Now I was pleased as pie. Pleased as punch. I don't remember. But don't you love how I love bringing up old sayings from like the 40s or the 50s or sometime a long time ago, back before or after pandemics? I know there was some sort of pandemic. Yeah, so some sort of plague in like 1918, maybe? Anyhow, I'm getting off track. I was pleased to be able to try another beer from Modern Times. Now, I was just pleased at the notion, not the beer itself. I don't want to do any spoiling here as we get into things. But I believe the first beer I ever had from Modern Times was a big old heavy dessert beer type of stout from when I was at the Half Acre Far and Away Invitational in 2018. That was my first beer. I think it was like a 13% stout from Modern Times. That was the first beer I grabbed when I arrived at the festival, because that was one of the breweries I recognized and one of the lines that wasn't extremely long when I first arrived on this scene. And I don't think I had ever had a Modern Times beer up to that point, so I wanted to give it a try. I certainly was not disappointed. But now that I am in Texas, I have found that there are more options as far as beer goes. I'm sorry, rambling here as I'm trying to load up a web page, so it's making for great audio content. But Modern Times did not distribute to the Midwest, certainly not in Illinois. So apparently where they distribute is in Southern California, Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, Utah, Hawaii, and the Pacific Northwest. Well, looks like they have to update their copy on this website because I found their beer in Austin, Texas. I didn't grab it right away because I was trying other stuff, and there's plenty of stuff that I have not tried around to be had, so I kind of held off. I did see one of their stovepipe cans in the store I usually go to, and I had been holding off, but I finally gave it a try. Modern Times, they brewed their first batch on May 18th, 2013, and their grand opening was September 7th, 2013. Whoever writes their copy for their cans and their website needs a raise, because I think they're doing a really good job. Modern Times also has a coffee program, so you can sign up for a coffee subscription from Modern Times and get it mailed to you. I wonder if they do that all across the country or if it's just in various areas. But coffee and beer, I love brewed beverages, so coffee and beer are definitely my jam. I love coffee and I love beer, so would love to get the opportunity to try some Modern Times coffee at some point. They have brewery and restaurant locations in Los Angeles and Portland, tasting rooms in Oakland and San Diego's North Park, and restaurant tasting rooms in Encinitas and Santa Barbara. So they are all over the place in California. But they are, like I said, not in the Midwest or in the East Coast for certain. So this was only my second try ever having a beer from Modern Times. In 2017, they became California's very first employee-owned brewery. So that is very cool. And they have the independent brewery label big and prominent on their cans. So that is awesome as well. So the beer that I picked up from them this time around was the Orderville, which is called a Hazy Mosaic IPA. Well, there's a couple of problems with this right off of the bat. First of all, the ABV is 7.2% on a hazy beer. So I don't know if that's really I don't think that's indicative of the style for a hazy or a New England style IPA. I think that's a little bit too high on the ABV. And that says a Mosaic IPA. But on the can, there's like 6 different hops listed. So it's not really a Mosaic IPA. So this should give you an indication of how this beer is going to be for me, or how it was for me when I had it. So, or would it be? I'm just kidding, actually. Those small minor nitpicks are really nothing, because this beer turned out to be really very, very tasty. And I don't worry about things about conforming to certain standards of style or anything like that. I did expect this just to be a Mosaic IPA when I first grabbed it out of the cooler, because I didn't really give it much of a look, but I figured I wanted to try it anyhow. And on the plus side, it was really particularly fresh. I think I consumed this maybe a week ago, so second or third week into October, and the date on the can was October 2nd of 2020. So very fresh, especially for a beer that had to travel from California. the Orderville had been missing from the store where I buy my stuff from for a couple of weeks at least. I hadn't seen it. I had seen a batch come through and then it sold out, and then they restocked, and I knew it was had to be relatively fresh stock. So when I checked the date, I was kind of expecting it to be fresh, but this was pretty darn fresh, so I was happy about that. Very fresh. Again, when I cracked open this can, I got a nice big hop aroma on the nose, so that gave me a preview of great things to come, and this beer certainly delivered on that front. Like I said, a 7.2% ABV here. The details they have on their can was very impressive. Up front, I felt like there was not a lot of information. Or I felt the can seemed simplistic in its artwork on the front of it, but the amount of detail they put on their can is rather impressive. 55 IBUs, so nice amount of bitterness. Maybe a little bit more bitterness than you would expect from a hazy, but I'm certainly not complaining. I think the bitterness definitely fleshes out the taste sometimes on these hazy beers. When there's not a lot of bitterness to be present, sometimes the aftertaste kind of leaves something to be desired. I've mentioned that in previous episodes. They even have the SRM on here. They listed it as a 5. So again, they put a reference color on there. They call it a gold. So that's awesome. You don't even see SRM on many cans. You don't even see it on a website, but let alone to have it on the can is awesome. They even list the final gravity 1.012. I have no idea what that means. I know the gravities. Well, I know from a standpoint of how you calculate the ABV of a beer is you take the initial gravity, which is when you have all the wort and ingredients and hops and everything and mixed into the beer before it boils. And then the final gravity after you've added the yeast and all that and it's done fermenting, then you measure the final gravity, kind of subtract the two, and the difference between the two is what's going to tell you what your ABV is. I believe that's a quick layman's terms of what the final gravity means. Perhaps I will dig some more into that for a future episode. For the malts, we've got 2-row rolled oat and white wheat. So that white wheat, I'm sure, is adding to that final color. And I know 2-row and rolled oat are lighter malts, so that's definitely, considering that malt bill, that's what's going to give you a lot for the majority of your color. So some basic malts, but they're letting the hops do the heavy lifting here. We've got a lot of Mosaic in here, but we've also got Simcoe, Euconaut, Experimental Hop 06277. Keep that one in mind because it's coming back in a later beer we're going to talk about later on. And Eureka and Nugget. Interestingly enough, in this collection of hops, they're all different from the hops that we talk about in our later beers in this episode. So that's pretty remarkable. There's no overlap there at all, surprisingly. But I like this collection of hops. Nugget, Eureka, Simcoe, Euconaut, Mosaic, and the Experimental. And it's proved to do this beer wonders. Now, the only thing I would say, this isn't really even a gripe, it's just an observation. When you pack a lot of hops into a particular beer, it kind of does all blend together as far as the bitterness and the hop taste goes. So it's hard to pinpoint any one particular hop. So not necessarily a bad thing, but... And again, like I mentioned with their copy, the can copy is somewhat impressive, and I will read here. Orville is a hazy IPA that blends the fruit-forward character of Mosaic and experimental 06277 hops with the resinous stickiness found in a melange of dank varieties. The resulting beer is immensely rad with an unmistakably banging aroma and a fully saturated hop flavor and finish. The juicy body provides a base layer upon which the massive, incredibly delicious hop character is built, inviting your taste buds to join a drum circle of flavor in a magical forest of hops. See what I mean about the copy? So they are really pushing the notions of the Mosaic and this experimental hop. So like I said, once the experimental hop is kind of front and center, how experimental can it really be? But anyway, Sky was super impressive. I liked the higher ABV to give it a little bit more punch, especially in the 19.2-ounce size can. I had to pay a little bit more, but that's just my own gripe for, you know, having to, being on a tight budget, being poor, you know, you gotta... it was $4, but like in the grand scheme of things, you know, $4 for more than a pint of beer is truly perfectly acceptable. But I mean, that's barely even a gripe. But I really enjoyed this beer. Very, very tasty. Like I said, having that little bit of ABV punch in there was awesome. But it was like the best of a regular IPA mixed with the best of a New England style IPA. And I was very impressed with this guy. So looking forward to maybe seeing more things from Modern Times if possible. And was really happy to give Orderville a try. So if you have Modern Times wherever you are, give Orderville a try. I think you will not be disappointed. This episode of the Let's Sip podcast is brought to you by the new audiobook presentation of $1,000 a Day, Studies in Practical Economics by Adeline Knapp. Why is the episode brought to you by this particular audiobook? Because it is an audiobook that I narrated and produced, my first attempt at such a project, and I hope you will check it out. The intro is now available for a free preview on YouTube, and the book is slowly rolling out to audiobook platforms everywhere. It is currently available on Google Play, Apple Books, Scribd, Chirp Books, and it's coming to more platforms very soon. So check it out. And before we go any further, I do need to clarify something about what I had discussed in last week's episode. I had discussed Ballast Point Brew Pub in Chicago shutting down. Didn't have too much information on that besides kind of a headline, so that's my bad. I'll take the journalistic integrity hit for that. But apparently they are looking to, they're calling this basically a temporary shutdown. So they are looking to reopen hopefully sometime in 2021. So we will see if that happens and we'll go from there. But apparently this is more of just a temporary shutdown because of the pandemic situation. And they'll be looking at reopening their doors. Now, I'm still a little bit skeptical when they say that. Just kind of like I was skeptical with Five Rabbit Brewery shutting down and saying they're going to open a smaller brew pub in another neighborhood of Chicago. I'm skeptical, but hopefully that all does pan out and that works. But we shall see. But I just want to clarify that Ballast Point is basically stating that they are looking to reopen and this shutdown is supposedly just temporary. So had to clarify that one. And I know we talked news in the last segment, but there is another piece of breaking news that just hit the web yesterday. Apparently Band of Bohemia is going bankrupt and they are shutting down. Band of Bohemia, made news because they were the first brew pub ever to receive a Michelin star. Michelin restaurants guide basically rates restaurants, and if you get a star from them, I don't exactly know how their star system works. I believe there's multiple stars. Maybe not. It's just the fact that you can get multiple, and I guess you're awarded one per year or something like that. And then if you get another one, then it's even more impressive because you're doing it multiple years in a row. But actually, Michelin, it is actually the same as the tire companies, like the Michelin Man. And basically, the restaurant guide was started because Michelin wanted you to drive more going to these restaurants and, you know, using up tires. And so then you'd have to get your tires fixed. So basically, yeah, the Michelin guide was basically started by the same company that makes the tires, believe it or not. It was more of a marketing thing than anything else, but it became kind of a well-known measure of restaurants. Kind of like an interesting how Guinness Book of World Records was started by actually Guinness, the company that makes the stout beer. And rumor was that the Guinness Book of World Records was started just so people would have something interesting to talk about while they were drinking beer. Now that kind of sounds a little more like it might not be true, but you know, that's kind of a stretch as far as a marketing ploy goes, but it is interesting to think that the Guinness beer makers started the world record organization as it is now. But Band of Bohemia was the first ever brew pub to receive a Michelin star. I had never been because if they're that renowned, I guess you could say, when it comes to their food, it was probably too expensive for me. And it's kind of just not my vibe. For as great as their beer might have been, I don't want to go to a place that's, you know, overly fancy or has really fancy, expensive food. The majority of the time when I'm looking to drink beer, I really don't want to eat all that much anyhow. I just want to sample what they have as far as beers go. So I'm not always looking to eat something when I go. But I never did get a chance to hit up their facility. I think at one point they had bottled some of their beer. They had like a limited bottle release that was in 750 milliliter bottles, I think, if I recall properly. But yeah, apparently they are going out of business, so they are going to be no more anyhow. This follows on the heels of some news that came out in July about them mistreating their staff and some questionable things going on there. So that certainly probably didn't help their business either, but with the pandemic and everything else, they are going bankrupt. So I'm sure the pandemic has not helped. You don't want to eat expensive, fancy food to go. I'm sure that was a concern, and you know, food integrity does suffer a little bit when you get takeout. Of course, it cools and everything else, and so perhaps it did not hold up as well as they would like it to. And who wants to pay that expensive price to get food when it's not in its ideal form that it could be? So yeah, Band of Bohemia is shutting down, so they are losing another brewery in the Chicagoland area. So unfortunately, another piece of bad news to kick off this second segment, but that is the state of the world we live in, unfortunately. Let's try to turn things around by talking some beer, shall we? Now, you remember last episode when I had mentioned Oscar Blues and if maybe they would put some sort of IPA some new IPA into the cooler at the store where I purchased my beer from. Well, guess what? That very thing just so happened to have occurred. And so I found some of the Cannabliss IPA stocked in the cooler when I went into the store recently. And this time around, the Cannabliss series was on a citrus IPA. Now, the Cannabliss series is, they keep changing up their IPAs with like seasonal go-arounds every so often. And they have a hazy IPA, they have a tropical IPA, and they have like a citrus IPA. And the can coloring on the tropical and the citrus IPA are somewhat similar. It's nice that the basic graphics on the can and everything like that are the same, but they do change up the colors each time they come out with a new Cannabliss release or a rotational release. So that's nice to be able to quickly identify them. Both the citrus and the tropical look like they might be a similar shade of green, but they are slightly different. But I got the citrus IPA in the Cannabliss series. And it looks like, I was looking at Oscar Blues' website, and it looks like they might have stopped making their Pinner, which was their, I believe they called it a throwback IPA, which is, I can't remember if it was more of a sessionable IPA or just a regular, but I thought that was a pretty solid beer. It's not nice to see that one go, but of course you've got to make your decisions, and marketing and the bottom line plays a factor in all of this. So it looks, there's no, for the beers they have listed on their website, looks like they kind of tried to list all of them, their seasonals and their year rounds, and Pinner is nowhere to be found. So it looks like they had stopped making that. This might be old news, but I don't recall hearing anything about it, but it might have just missed my radar. I had mentioned with the old Shub that their cans had looked a little bit different. Apparently that can refresh had taken place at the beginning of this year. I just hadn't seen it until now. I know with some of the Pinner cans, I'm sorry, not Pinner cans. I always mess that up. The stovepipe-sized cans. I know with the last batch that I had seen floating around my local store, they were still the old design. So I don't know if they haven't gotten around to adjusting for the stovepipe size yet, or maybe the stovepipe pot size are going to stay the same until they run out of cans. That might be the case, considering whatever they have planned for the future and whatnot. So the Cannabliss Citrus IPA, it certainly did not disappoint. I believe the date on the can was around the end of August. So I knew we were in good shape there as far as being relatively fresh. I guess the Cannabliss series launched in 2019, so I'm a little bit behind, but I'm behind in plenty of beer releases, of course, so that's not a big surprise. The Citrus IPA is at a 7.2% ABV, and it is brewed with what their website quotes as an international blend of hops, including Motueka, Amarillo, Mandarina Bavaria, Citra, Azaka, and experimental hop 06277. Now keep that hop in mind, because we're actually going to be talking about that a little bit later on. For the SRM, their website actually has it ticked at a 4.5. So that's surprisingly rather light colored from what I often expect from an IPA. Usually the SRM is the color spectrum that is used to identify how dark a beer is. And so the lesser the number of the SRM is, the lighter the beer is going to be. So when you're looking at an SRM like a 4.5, you're looking at what they would call a straw color. I would say almost like a Pilsner beer or kind of a macro lager. That's kind of the look that you're getting out of this particular kind of beer. Just a little tiny hint of maybe a brown color, but usually more of a yellowish tint. Maybe straw sounds better than like a yellowish tint, so that's probably why they use the word straw to describe it. Forget what SRM stands for off the top of my head, so I'm just gonna have to let that go. The website says the juicy lineup expresses not only typical notes like grapefruit and orange, but an exotic array of subtle citrus fruits like kefir, lime, bergamot, tangerine, and yuzu. And when I cracked open this can, I got a nice whiff of hops from about, a little more than half foot away, which is usually what I expect from a nice big dank IPA. So I was very happy for that. Yeah, with this beer and the Cannel Bliss name, I wasn't sure if this was going to be something that maybe was hemp-infused, but I think they're going more from the fact that this is a dank beer. And the hemp thing is so-so. I mean, it's fine. I've had beer from Sweetwater that was made with hemp, and then I had the Hemperer from New Belgium made with hemp, and it's fine. It's definitely gives it a kind of a unique weedy, more dankness aroma and a little bit more dank taste, but it doesn't turn the beer into something spectacular. So the hemp thing, I think, is more of a marketing gimmick than anything else. It adds a little something unique to a beer, but I don't think it makes a beer much better than anything else that you could possibly have. So no hemp here, but plenty of dankness, and that hop profile is really impressive. Motueka, I'm seeing more and more of every time I get beers or see a lot of these breweries coming out with, especially in the days of haze and dankness, Motueka is always in the mix. Citra, of course, is a all-star. Amarillo is always a good one to see. Mandarina Bavaria, you don't see too much of that, but it's nice to see that thrown in there. Azaka, of course, and then this experimental hop. It's funny with the experimental hops, at what point do they not become experimental anymore when everybody is using them more frequently? But until they name it something permanent, then they just have to go from experimental on the number, because they have yet to actually name the hop. Time to call the hop naming committee and have them work on coming up with a name. So yeah, it was surprising that after I had talked about maybe seeing something new from Oscar Blues, that this can showed up into my local store. I was glad to get to try it. Very solid IPA. Nothing super extraordinary, but it was a decent pour, to be certain. And I think with this one, I do remember a little hint of alcohol, I believe, I got on it, which I was kind of surprised by. I mean, it's 7.2%, so it's a decent amount on the ABV, but I was a little shocked. I felt like I tasted a slight hint of alcohol. But that, and that is not the first time I've had it with these kinds of beers. I believe I had the same kind of notes when I had the electric jellyfish from Pint House. That was the first beer I had when I arriving in Texas here. And I think I got a little bit of alcohol hint on that too. I think it was alcohol hint a little bit. But it's also, I'm wondering if this is also part of the fact that a lot of the time, see, there's no IBU mention on this beer on the website, so I really don't know what the IBU is. If they're going for more for a dry hopped feel to this, and there's less bitterness on the finish, then there is less bitterness to mask that ABV. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with it. Because when you compare it to a beer like Two Hearted, which is a 7.0 ABV IPA, you still have that bitterness on the finish because it's a more traditional American style IPA. But when you're looking at haze and more of that floral bouquet of hops on the front end, and you're not doing so much of the bitterness hops on the back end, then there's not that bitterness there to mask the alcohol. So I'm wondering if that has a factor in why some of that alcohol seemed to come through a little bit more on this particular beer. But definitely worth the taste. I think Oscar Blues makes some quality stuff. They do have a facility here in Austin, so if and when things go back to at least a point where we can drink beer in public again, I would love to hit up their facility and taste what they're doing lately. I also saw again the G-Night, the Good Night, their Imperial Red IPA. Saw that can on their website again, and it's been a long time since I had one of those, so I'd definitely like to revisit that beer at some point if I could. But yeah, I don't believe I've ever had anything else from the Cano Bliss series. They had been around since 2019, so maybe I have, but I don't recall offhand. I don't think I did, so it was good to be able to try this. Didn't blow me away, but it was very good, and I'm glad I got to try it. Now, on the other end, I also got to try another citrus IPA from Community Beer Company. And if you recall, I did review the Mosaic IPA from Community Beer Company a handful of episodes ago. And they have another IPA called the Citra Slice. And this is a 7.0% ABV beer, so another IPA that packs a little bit of ABV punch. The bitterness is at 50 IBUs, so nice, good, middle-of-the-road bitterness there. And I believe it was the Community Beer Company, when I had the Mosaic IPA that didn't have a date on their cans, maybe it was on the edge. I remember having two beers when I had that, and one of them, I think, wasn't dated at all. The other was. But the Citrus Slice did not have a date on it, so unfortunately I did not know how fresh it was when I bought it. But the can just did hit the shelf, so I was hoping it was relatively fresh. But at the same time, I know that the store sometimes will break up six packs that haven't been selling well and stick them in the individual cooler, sort of like they do at Mixes Six places elsewhere where they have make your own six packs. Sometimes that ends up happening, which is unfortunate, but a fact of life. But from what I could tell, the citrus slice seemed to be relatively fresh. I did not notice any paperish aftertaste on the finish, and the hops still seem to be mostly intact. And the citrus slice is an India pale ale with citrus. And basically what this means, according to their website, is they've taken premium citra hops and expertly blended them with fresh lemon and orange peel. So premium citra hops, not just regular citra hops. They got the premium. They got the Cadillac of citra hops. Results in explosively delicious citrus-forward India pale ale bursting with tropical flavors and aromas. I'm curious how much these peels add to the overall alcohol content on a beer. I'm assuming probably a decent amount. I would think that whatever sugars and everything else is extracting from these peels is adding to is why these beers are pushing up in the 7.0 range. And of course it's adding a little bit to the taste as well, but it's also an opportunity to add to the ABV without throwing a bunch of malt in on top of it. I'm not a huge fan of the citrus IPA, but I do think that it's, this was another one that was a decent sip. It wasn't overly sweet, which is what I like from a citrus IPA. And even so, if it's going to be a citrus, if they want to call it a citrus IPA and make it a little less fruit forward than something you might find in, let's say, a grapefruit IPA or a blood orange IPA, that's all right in my book as well. And Community Brewing is out of Houston, Texas. I mentioned that in my previous episode. Their tap room is still closed due to the state of the country, but they are selling beer to go, so you can pick some beer up fresh from the brewery, so that is an option. But this was another quality beer from them. I really enjoyed the Mosaic IPA. I thought this was equally as solid. Not overly memorable, but still good nonetheless. Like I said, I wish they had a date on the can, but I couldn't remember if that was the one where I thought maybe there was no date on the can, but it was on kind of the edge, like the printer on their canning machine was just kind of needed to be calibrated and was off center. That wasn't the case with this particular can. I did check all areas at the bottom and there was just no date whatsoever. So I would ding them a point for that, but otherwise the citrus slice was a decent beer and definitely worth checking out if you have the opportunity to do so. Would like to see more of just a Citra IPA stand on its own, but you know, what can you do? It's a citrus IPA, so you're gonna get more of that fruit feel in there as well. But it works with this particular beer, so I have no complaints. And I think I've prattled on enough for this particular episode. And stay tuned, because I believe in the next episode I'm going to talk about the second ever beer I had from Modern Times. And it also features that experimental hop 06277. So stay tuned for that. That will do it for this episode of the Let's Sip podcast. I'm your host, Brandon E. Gaylor. Podcast theme music composed by Brandon E. Gaylor. Special thanks to Anchor.fm for hosting the podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram at Let's Sip Podcast. Thank you very much for sipping with us, and we'll drink with you again next time. Bye-bye.